Well, well, well. Here we are, Friday, together again with Michael Harrison from Talkers Magazine, talkers.com. How are you, Michael?
I am fantastic, Todd. I can't believe it's Friday already, but it's so good to be with you and with our listeners. How are you doing?
How would you feel about a new arrangement where every day was Friday?
Well, that would be like if everybody were a conservative or everybody were a liberal.
Well, everybody were a liberal would be horrible, but if everybody were a conservative, it'd be a beautiful world.
No, it's an impossible thing. Oh, you can't have everybody as a conservative and everybody as a liberal. As soon as you had everybody as a conservative, the more liberal among them would suddenly be the liberals.
Well, that's true.
And if you have every day be a Friday, there'd be nothing to look forward to. What would we do? We'd have to start numbering them. Friday 1, Friday 2, Friday 3.
Oh, and then you just differentiate again the same way you did before.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then in other words, we are unchangeable.
We're caught in a three-dimensional paradigm of left, right, up and down, forward and backward, and we can't do a damn thing about it.
Because I was thinking it'd be great to wake up every day and just say, ah, finally.
If only we could do that. That's like very mystical. That's, you know, be in the now, my son, be in the now. Well, where is the now?
You mean we should feel that way about every day, because the
of
alternative
course.
Would be if we didn't have a day.
Exactly. But you can't really be in the now, because you can't wrap your brain around the now. That's the whole, you know, mystery.
How bizarre is that?
Well, what is a minute? What is a moment? What is?
Well, but there is, I think the rest of the creatures on the planet are basically operating in the moment. Like the prey goes by and they're off and running. They don't think about it, do they?
I think they do exactly what we do. They just do it differently.
Really? They hit the button on the recliner and get themselves in a more comfortable position.
Haven't
say,
you ever
yeah,
seen?
I'll do it tomorrow.
Haven't you ever seen a cat or a dog kind of scrunch up and a bunch of blankets or something like that? Yeah, they're the same as we are.
Well, cats, absolutely... but those are, you just cited two animals that we've polluted with usness.
We call it domesticate.
Yes, exactly.
Well, that's because we are so deeply into speciesism or speciesism that we don't realize how we impose our will on these poor creatures and think it's for their good.
Yeah, we've squeezed the animal out of them.
That was like, you know, back in the days when I was a kid, they used to teach us that missionaries that went into Africa or the settlers that went into the West were helping these savages and these natives understand the benefits of civilization.
They were. They were teaching them the missionary position.
Now that I have no comeback for. That's what's called a kicker. So with that being said, I was fascinated by the newscast that was going on at the during the 3 o'clock hour.
What did they say that caught your interest?
They did a story about scammers, that the number of scammers online, particularly in Connecticut,
yeah,
are at an all-time high, and that the scammers are now becoming extremely sophisticated by combining their criminality with all of that personal information that's out there about you. They take that information and then they customize their scams to make it really appear that they're legitimate, because they know things about you and they have a familiarity with you that makes it impossible that this is coming from.
Isn't it funny how we didn't anticipate this? Have you heard about that scam where people will call up a house and of grandparents and tell them that they're calling on behalf of their grandson who's in trouble, yep, in a certain place, and they've got all this information that makes it totally plausible.
Mm. Or they actually call and they go, "Grandpa, I'm in trouble."
Oh, I'm, yes, that's right.
I'm in New Zealand, you know, whatever. And they took my license, they took my wallet, they took my money. And they're going to hang me if I don't come up with $322 in Bitcoin.
Wait, you
in
must
the next
be the guy
minutes.
Who's been doing this. You seem to know it inside out.
Yeah, but I have to tell you, I'm not into hate, but I'm going to do a little hate talk right now.
Okay.
I'm going to do some hate mongering. This is hate radio, folks.
Cool.
I hate scammers. I hate them. I fantasize about having a button on my computer that I could press a button and send a phaser torpedo through the wires right into their damn faces.
Oh, you have to be in Nevada if you want to do that. You in one of those bunkers, you know, those trailers.
Yeah.
Those special trailers with the bunkers.
I absolutely hate these people. I really do. I hate them. I think.
How long have you felt this way?
A long time. Long time. people that have no conscience, people that are in the business and it becomes routine, it becomes part of their profession to bilk people out of money, to invade people's privacy, to have such a lack of respect for what's good and what's right. They're not deserving of the same attention we give to back to the animals conversation. They're contemptible. They're not worthy.
Well, I understand that
human
attitude, but I try to be empathetic, and I think about, okay, I'm living in some impoverished place in India, say, where, and I've got 13 kids to feed, and suddenly that becomes the opportunity. I don't know if I would think twice if I could give my family a better life.
You sound like a liberal.
I'm trying to channel them all the time because I want to. I try to method act the other side's position.
Actually, that's a noble thing to do. Put yourself in the other guy's shoes. But I don't know whether the poor guy living in India who's struggling to feed his or her family is the one that's doing these scams. I think it's...
It's probably people in a penthouse in Manhattan, huh?
I wouldn't be surprised. Billionaires, it's the billionaires that are doing it.
What is Bernie's problem with successful people?
That 1%, that 1%, 999% of the wealth is owned by 1%.
Is this a dangerous form of politics, do you think?
Yeah.
Enemy making?
Definitely.
The opposition has to be an enemy.
Yeah, I think it's the worst thing that's ever happened to the country. It's one of the 10 crappiest things to happen in my lifetime.
Really?
Yeah. I was thinking about putting together a list. I was.
Yeah, let's do the countdown.
Well,
do you have any sound
set
effects handy?
Number 10.
Sound effects. Let me turn to my hang on here.
He's got them.
Let me turn to my sound effects machine. All right, I need to just, you have to give me a second. I didn't know that you wanted me to.
Well, I didn't know either.
Do sound effects.
Okay, I'm living in the moment.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Todd Feinberg.
Dearly beloved.
Where were we?
This is what Friday does to you. It brings out the best.
I think everybody should have an orchestra in their head as a chip where you just wiggle your nose and you play. Yeah.
You mentioned that because I was thinking the other day about the early days of radio when they used to, you know, there were no recording devices and they just had to do live. They had to have the band handy to do that whenever they needed it.
As a matter of fact, when they went to records, that was considered the death of radio. The disc jockey was a demon. You talk about demonization. The unions, the musician unions.
All the jobs lost.
They lost all the jobs. It was part and parcel for a serious radio station, a real radio station, to have a large studio where they had a radio orchestra.
Can you imagine how much fun it must have been to do radio in the days when every second was performed in real time and you were one of the performers?
It was like even live television that came in the 50s when they did live plays and they did live kiddie shows and they had talk shows that were in real time.
In the early days of sitcoms, were there real audiences there?
I think so. I think that many of them were. As a matter of fact, one of the suspensions of disbelief that I find the hardest to really swallow is the canned laughter thing.
Oh, it's so gross. As soon as I hear it, I change the channel.
Yeah, it's some of the best comedies have been ruined, made cheesy by canned laughter.
I think so. Somehow people don't mind.
Well, I don't think people think about it. I think that suspension of disbelief is an amazing thing. We accept things that really are impossible, and yet we no longer, or ridiculous on face value. And we just accept them. The idea of canned laughter is ridiculous.
But the human experience is all about selective vision, isn't it?
Boy, you're getting philosophical.
I think about it all the time because I see a car that I've never seen before and I say, wow, look at that. And then I see 500 of them the next day.
Do you think that that's do you think those 500 were there the day before? And
yes.
You blanked them out? Is that what
you're
saying?
Yeah, somehow it didn't penetrate my consciousness until I became aware of that vehicle.
Uh-huh. If our brains were processing every piece of input that goes through our eyes and our ears, we would go insane in about 30 seconds.
Well, if we couldn't turn it off.
But that's what we're doing. You obviously were not cognizant of that car. It became wallpaper.
Yes.
You did not focus on it. You didn't think about it. Once you became aware of it, it entered that part of your brain where it was now on the front burner. It was in the
Yeah, conversely, file. You suddenly become obsessed with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only
and
thing
you
see.
It. But you know, we're human beings are wired to see patterns. We sometimes see things that aren't there. Like you can look up at a cloud and you can see a horse flying across the sky. Well, is that really a horse or is it just your imagination? And does the guy next to you see the horse? We see patterns, and the patterns work sometimes to our advantage where we actually make connections of things mm-hmm. that weren't at first obvious. But they also create connections that really have no basis in anything other than random coincidence.
Isn't it great? We can be so wrong about the things we believe ourselves to be most right about.
Well, actually, history, education, science, and growth are coming to junctures as we evolve, at which we realize that the things that we held to be real were not true. Science, especially. The worst thing are scientists that don't want to hear from fringe scientists or don't want to hear about people that are experimental. No, 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 they're not part of the scientific establishment. They're kooks. Why is it that every scientist that ever made a breakthrough was originally looked at as a kook? Because what happens is you start to cling to the past when science, and when I say science, I mean everything having to do with education. Science is a matter of finding what's not true about the things you believe so you can go forward. Now, does that mean that Isaac Newton was a liar because he had a certain view of gravity that Einstein later found out was not the whole picture and that Newton was wrong? Was he a liar? No, he wasn't a liar. He was just wrong. And then
Einstein wasn't there when the apple hit him on the head. Maybe if Einstein had been hit on the head, he would have felt differently about the whole thing.
That's very possible. But the truth of the matter is you're being funny when we're having a very serious conversation about the meaning of life. So
I apologize because I really want to know about the meaning of life. But one meaning is we've got to take a break right now. Michael Harrison is here. It's Friday. We'll continue coming up on WTIC. Friday, WTIC, Todd Feinberg here with Michael Harrison. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to throw you off course, Michael.
I wasn't on a course. You're the host of the show. I'm just following your lead.
Well, I'm just following your lead. Where does
That's
that
That's why
put
we're
us?
Going in circles.
I think so. Let's. Do you have anything else you wanted to say on that? Because I want to talk a little bit more about the Democrats.
I was just going to suggest that we start to talk about the politics of this past week, which were just high drama, high entertainment, and highly consequential.
It was fascinating seeing Michael Bloomberg, this high-powered tycoon, one of the richest men on the planet, who walked into a firing squad that had been telegraphed all over the media, like we all knew all week, the sabotage of his efforts that was going to come at him. Mm-hmm. Precisely, we'd heard it described. And he seemed oblivious to the whole thing, was caught off guard.
He set a record. He set a record, though. He actually set a record. Mike Bloomberg lost $380 million in Las Vegas in one night.
How you mean his like
campaign?
His campaign
went down the drain. It was a joke.
Oh, I thought you meant literally, like he did.
No, it was just a joke.
It did seem like he got destroyed, didn't?
Yeah, he was destroyed. That was a revelation, and it wasn't a surprise. However, there's two things that you just said that are very important. One, it was telegraphed. Any fool would know that he's going to be questioned on these things. He doesn't have enough resources to prep and be able to answer. You know, even if you make it up out of thin air, his answers were witnesses for the prosecution. I mean, he was like Prince Andrew talking to the BBC about Me Too. His answers made him, you dig a hole even deeper. And that's what he did. He dug his hole.
He confirmed the negative narrative about him.
Absolutely. Not just in terms of the deeds and the words, but also in the attitude. And part two of this, in my opinion, is that this shows you that this man lives like a king. He lives in a situation with thousands of employees. Nobody ever tells him he's wrong. Nobody ever tells him what to do. He could not believe that in the real world people actually attack you. It's been years since he was.
No one talks to me like that.
Well, when he said, "Let me finish, please." And you heard in the audience, ooh.
Right.
Like, ooh, the
whoa,
king is
Nike
annoyed.
He doesn't like it.
Yeah, it's Go ahead.
Well, it occurs to me that this is a malaise that impacts everybody who's in positions of power, that they get comfortable in those positions. And even the most acute messaging, presumably he's got a lot of high-powered, high-priced consultants who've been telling him and maybe going through practice sessions with him to prepare him for this, and he somehow was emotionally not connecting with the message they were giving him.
Obviously not. Or maybe they weren't giving him the message. Maybe his consultants were selected by virtue of whether he liked them or not.
Well, how could he be that dumb then if he's so brilliant that he became one of the richest men in the world?
Because a lot of very, very dumb people get lucky because they're smart in one area at one time, and then they go on thinking that everything they do will work out, and they don't have more successes. They either destroy what they have, or they just roll on with what they have and never do anything else.
Or some very smart people get stupid just by laziness that sets in because everyone's telling them, as you're alluding to, how great they are all the time.
I think that a better word than laziness, because I don't think he's lazy. I think a better word is arrogance. I think he's arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
I think he reeks of arrogance. Now, you heard a lot of people say, and you know that I'm not a Trump lover. I'm not a Trump hater. I like talking about the good things about Trump, and I have no fear about talking about the things that I don't like about him. So it was very interesting hearing some of the candidates and some of the pundits say that all Bloomberg is another Trump. That we would have two billionaires battling it out and two arrogant kings battling it out. But there is a big difference between the two. If Trump were in that situation, and he was in that situation, he was on that stage with 17 professional, sharp, knowledgeable, cutthroat politicians. Turn the clock back, you know, 3.5 years. He demolished them all, and he didn't have anything more going for him at that point.
The people, in my mind, who are most like what you just described about Donald Trump are right. Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. They have
right.
that kind of ruthless lust for power that seems to allow them to do anything, say anything, seize any moment in any way necessary
mm-hmm.
to get power.
Yeah, yeah. Now let's switch down the panel to Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar.
Let's make that a tease. We'll pause for our bottom of the hour newscast. Michael Harrison is here from Talkers Magazine. Visit talkers.com if you want to learn more about him. And we will continue the conversation coming up on WTIC.
All my wolves begin to howl. Wake me up, the time is now. Oh, can you hear the drumming? Oh, there's a revolution coming.
Thanks so much for being here on this Friday. First hours we share with Michael Harrison from Talkers Magazine. We're talking about the debate, the Democratic debate that happened this week. And there's another one, Michael, maybe Wednesday. It's coming up fast.
Can you imagine? I mean, now there's vengeance. Now there's the blood has been shed.
So
now,
a whole new Michael Bloomberg will show up, right?
I don't know if he's capable. That's a very good question. I wonder how Bloomberg internalized what happened. It was very hard to tell by his face, and I wonder what plans he will take now to rectify the situation. I don't know if he knows how to play catch-up. You're a sports fan. You know, playing catch-up is very different than when you're leading, and I don't know whether he has it in his makeup at this point to...
Well, you have to assume somebody who's had huge, huge success in the world has some kind of competitive streak in them or something, some drive that gets triggered when they're in certain situations, and maybe this will do it for them. Okay, I'm in a contest. I've been in contests before. I know what you have to do. I'm going to win this thing.
That's possible. But it's also possible that he doesn't. It's possible, as I said earlier, when we talked about that, just because somebody's made a lot of money or is successful, it doesn't mean that they necessarily possess the assets, the skills, the tools to be able to do it again and again. In some cases, they just fell into it. And then they ride on this reputation, because people believe if you have, you know, the stars on your lapel, if you have the title after your name, if you have a lot of money, I guess it's human nature to believe you know something that I don't know. There must be a reason why I'm sitting on this side of the desk talking to you on that other side of the desk. And then sometimes when you're talking to somebody or you're watching them, you say, why are they doing that? You usually say they must have a reason.
We tend to give other people a lot more credit than we give ourselves.
Exactly. And yet, you know, I'm sure people listening to this broadcast can relate in their own life an occasion where they found out that somebody that was supposed to be an authority or somebody who was successful, it could have been a teacher that you had that you were supposed to be so excited to be in the class and all of this, and you find out that they really don't know what they're talking about. And I don't know. I think it was pretty amazing that Michael Bloomberg got himself into that situation and did not have the right answers. You see, at least Trump comes up with very, very creative lies. You can't get him in a corner. At least he has the wherewithal to stretch the truth in such a way that for enough people it's credible or plausible. He has credulity. But Bloomberg was just, you know, well, it's just an agreement between two parties that want their privacy, and that's the way it'll be.
Wow. You captured his full powerlessness right there.
You know,
that was good. So, you know. So talk about Pete Buttigieg. You wanted to say something
about him?
What did
you think? We have a lot of sociological concepts at play here. First of all, how did it appear? A young guy in his 30s being so disrespectful to a mature, accomplished woman, trying to corner her and harp on her and stick the knife in after he had already made his point to the point that he had her quivering and saying, "Are you saying I'm dumb? Are you?"
Oh, you're talking about Amy Klobuchar.
Yeah,
I felt like she was playing the chick card, just like Elizabeth Warren did when she said came to Amy's defense.
I think that that Liz Warren plays every card. I don't think Elizabeth Warren is a very sincere person.
No,
although
not
I do
in the
think
least.
She's a hell of a talker, and she's very, very, very good actress. I don't find Amy Klobuchar to be. I think Amy Klobuchar is a well-meaning, well-adjusted, pragmatic politician who's
exactly. She doesn't read well on the stage. In other words.
But I think that if she were by some hook or crook to be president, just as Gerald Ford became president, just like Harry Truman became president, just like Teddy Roosevelt became president, you know, they weren't elected at first. I think that Amy Klobuchar is a person that I wouldn't go, oh my God, an idiot is in the White House.
Oh no, she'd be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we have this process, though, that requires you to be superhuman in some way to
or super interesting or appeal to our deepest wishfulness and our belief in royalty. but back to the two of them, when he hit her with the gaffe that she made about the Mexican president, she didn't have a good answer. She even had to rely on her notes to be able to say the man's name, which means, just like Michael Bloomberg.
Yeah, she was hanging around with Bloomberg. She's
a
billionaire.
She did not take the time to prepare for the questions that were inevitable. And I don't understand that. I don't understand how anybody could get on that stage, know that they're going to get smashed on a certain point, and not have a quick answer.
It is incredible. Because
yeah,
she did. She just recently had a great debate at the previous debate going into New Hampshire. She had a great performance that allowed her to surge in New Hampshire, surprise everybody, and become a semi-contender. And you would have thought she would obsess over how to make that happen again, how to make lightning strike a second time.
Maybe it had the exact opposite. Maybe it made her lazy, as you pointed out, or arrogant, as I pointed out. Maybe she was lazy and arrogant. Hey, I got this thing licked. I'm Amy. I was destined to be queen. I'm going to be president. And suddenly think that they are riding the wave of inevitability.
Now, did you think that Mayor Pete did something wrong or malicious?
I didn't like the way he treated Amy. I think that he, if he were a little more seasoned, a little more gracious, a little kinder, he could have gotten out of that with twice the benefit. Make your point, move on, be kind. He seemed to not like her. And obviously there's been a lot brewing between those two. And I think nastiness and lack of kindness, even if you're correct, even if you win the debate on points,
well, especially. I think
you're going to lose in the end. I think.
But wasn't that the tenor of the whole thing? Wasn't it the meanest?
That's why a lot of people are saying the winner of that debate was Donald Trump.
Because they were all so hateful towards each other. Clearly, they're so obsessed with power. That's all that matters to them.
Or they would say to you, they're obsessed with the rightness of their perspective. I could just imagine. Elizabeth Warren, here's why. Okay, Elizabeth Warren. I am not obsessed with power. I'm obsessed with taking the power from those people who are abusing us. I can't stand. Let me tell you a story. There's this poor baby that I ran into laying in the street, and a mother was starving in an alley, and that's because of the insurance companies that took their money from them and wouldn't give them the drugs.
That was an impeccable impersonation, except for one thing. Each sentence has to start with either the word so or the word look.
You're right. And here's the deal. Have you noticed that's another one? Yeah, Joe Biden. Oh, look. I am the only one on this stage who ever did anything. Now, here's the deal. Here's the deal. I don't remember the deal. Yeah. They have reached the point, this cast of characters, where guys like you and me were able to satirize them. We're able to do impersonations of them, which I think is, we're in an amazing point in this tremendous reality show called the presidential election of 2020.
You're saying they've gotten themselves into these little boxes of performance.
Yes.
Where
yes.
they're very limited in their range.
Yeah. Well, I guess under the scrutiny that presidential candidates today come under, maybe any human being is limited. You know, how would Harry Truman have made out? How would Abraham Lincoln have made out? How would John F. Kennedy and Richard Nixon have made out if they were in this situation?
JFK would have been just fine, I think. I don't know about Richard Nixon, because JFK's thing was he was so good for TV.
Hmm. Yeah.
Are you talking about the television aspect, or is it something else?
I'm talking about the video aspect, yeah. Yeah, no question.
Yeah, it's no longer television, but it is. We have been taken over our politics by this two-dimensional performance aspect, and it does seem to be putting a kind of a crushing weight on our ability to communicate political ideas.
That is very well said. What you just said is exactly what's happening, and it's making it very shallow. And we don't wind up with a president or a congressman or a dog catcher that really is there for a purpose other than to please us aesthetically.
They're all chasing dogs.
They're all chasing dogs, and they're all chasing power, just like you said before.
Yeah. All right. Any good news this week you want to talk about? Anything that made you happy?
Oh, wow. Good news. Let me take out my box here.
That's an unfair question. I apologize for even throwing that out there.
Good news. There's a lot of good news happening in areas that I don't think are appropriate for this conversation, like in the area of science and space.
No, what's wrong
discovery.
With that? Give us a science idea.
They're finding water on Jupiter. And
really?
Every day we get closer and closer to discovering life.
What is the so if we find water on Jupiter, how does that change our trajectory?
Wherever there's water, there's a very good chance that there's life. Water is
the building block.
Oh, it's even deeper than that. It's deeper, no pun intended. It's the platform upon which life can grow. It's not even a building block. It's the water that fish swim in. It's what life grows in. So,
but is it more than that? Do there have to be certain temperature ranges, for example?
Well,
we're starting
to learn that even here on Earth, wherever they go, they find life in volcanoes, at the bottom of the ocean, in places that are freezing cold, in places where there isn't a lot of air. That we used to think of life as basically being, very limited in its scope, very, mm-hmm. very fragile. And what we're finding out is that life can deal with anything. We have a certain category of life that the scientists have called extremophiles. They love living in extremes. They live in acid. There's life that lives in hydrochloric acid.
So it's like how a cactus only needs a drop, you know, a teaspoon of water every
right.
2 weeks or something.
Well, this is a revelation because, one, we're finding out that life is far more flexible and resilient, and it's almost as if the universe were here to sprout life, that everything in the universe is designed to create life, that it's not necessarily just a one-shot deal in this one little speck.
You know, it's funny you say that. You see sometimes trees or plants popping out of the strangest places. I saw a video the other day where with these some kind of goats that live on, they can climb up these rocks.
They can climb. They defy gravity. The goat that you're talking about has the ability to absolutely walk up a wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's stunning.
Yeah.
And it is like what you're the it's like existence or wants there to be living things.
Yes.
That it was built somehow for that.
That
to
the
happen.
Universe was built for that. So that discovery, coupled with the fact that life is able to exist in environments that we didn't know it could, coupled with the discovery that just because all the planets in our solar system, and we're just talking about locally now, we're not talking about the billions and billions, thank you, Carl Sagan, of galaxies and stars and planets that are out there, a gazillion places where life could be, but just in our own solar system, we were under the impression that only the Earth could have life because the other planets were either too far from the sun and thus cold, or too close to the sun and thus hot.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're discovering, wait a second, there's heat. There's heat out there. There's heat coming from inside planets, that Jupiter is hot, that Jupiter has moons that have heat coming out of them.
So that, there could be just a little crevice that has life in it.
Yes. That there are suddenly all of these possible environments out there in the cold expanse of deep space that could have life. And it doesn't mean that they're going to be, you know, green men with computers.
No, but it's fascinating what it opens up for us. Yeah. All right, hold on. Michael Harrison is here. We'll continue on WTIC. WTIC, Michael Harrison is here. Michael, I watched a video last night that my producer, Mike Olko, sent to me. One of those great YouTubes that you like to watch. And it was it was a guy being interviewed by Joe Rogan who was talking about, I don't know anything about the guy, but he was talking about the extreme things he does, the extreme physical difficult activities that he likes to go through. And he described life as for him that he thinks most people end up living life between a 4 and a 6, with the lower numbers being life's pain and the higher numbers being life's joy, and that he's determined that he doesn't want his life to be between a 4 and a 6. He wants it to be to the extreme on both ends. He wants ones and tens in there because that's the full range of living. And I thought it was a fascinating thing. I feel like our civilized life is robbing us of those extremes that make life vibrant and exciting.
Yeah, sometimes we err on the side of caution and miss out on the benefits of
and comfort.
Taking a chance.
Yeah.
Comfort. Oh, boy. Oh, yeah. I think each and every one of us, all, you know, 10 billion of us involved in this conversation are probably unprepared to deal with anything that isn't absolutely within our comfort zone. That's how spoiled we are.
And it's happened so quickly that we've become so spoiled.
Mm, yeah. That's a real issue. And it creates a distance between people who live like that and people in the world who are truly starving or suffering. And I don't know, in some cases we protect ourselves from that because we know in the end we're going to get it too. So, you know, in the end, you know, as Jim Morrison sang, no one here gets out alive.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, you know, the nature's going to lay you low. You have to hope it is smooth and swift and not, you know, not painful.
Yes. Yeah. It's just sad to think that because nature has always provided such difficulties to us. We've got this finely honed machinery to find comfort and safety and security and calories that we need to survive. But now we're at the other end where we're abundant in all of those things that we used to have to fight for, and now we don't have the thing that we were formed around.
Well, what do you think? What do you consider, or what did this guest consider to be something that would make life a 10? I mean, what is it that he?
Well, he does these wild physical things, you know, like going out on treks that are extreme burdens, where they talked about sleeping for 90 minutes at a time and then rowing boats for 90 minutes at a time and not having a bathroom, just using a pail, and, you know, putting himself in extreme situations where he was challenging himself so that he would suffer and then he'd get to go to the other extreme, the pleasure that he got from having accomplished something.
I sometimes wonder whether people like that are trying to compensate for some type of guilt or something that they have to prove, an inferiority complex.
Well, I'm sure they are. But at the same time, there must be something really exciting about it.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, if you had a chance to go on an expedition now and all expenses paid to climb Everest, would you do it?
No, I'd watch Netflix.
No, I mean, do you ever feel wanderlust or the feeling that you're missing out on things?
Yes. Because
you haven't sailed across the ocean in a sailboat?
Not that specifically, but I do feel that even I remember being a kid and struggling with cold and stuff like that in ways that we don't seem to do anymore. Sorry, we got to wrap it up. Michael Harrison, thank you, sir. It's always great, our Friday hour. We'll see you again next week.
Thanks a lot, Todd. Thank you.
Thank you.